And we'll start with our movies before us now for your consideration and delectation. Yet another adaptation of Jane Austen's handsome, clever and rich heroine, Emma, and Jihad Jane from Irish documentary maker Ciarán Cassidy. Paul Whittington and Carol Doherty have been to the cinema for us and they're with me now. Does the world need another Emma? Does the world ever need Emma? Just remind us of, Cara, if you would, of just how nasty a bit of work Emma is actually, or is she just funny in Jane Austen's novel?
I wouldn't say nasty exactly. She has, she's very vain, she's very snooty, she's very snobby and has a habit of coming out with quite cutting remarks.
Other than that, she's lovely.
Other than that, she is lovely. You know, there's not a lot to do in Austenian times, so you've a certain personality and a path to follow, and hers is the one of the vain lady. But she does get to change as she goes along.
I suppose that's the redeeming factor, isn't it, that she does change as time goes on. We've had a lot of Emmas,
we've had a few Emmas, and people will remember the Gwyneth Paltrow one, which
was that the one with Alan Rickman?
Yes, rather spoilt the story by making Emma Woodhouse too likable back in a time when it was possible to consider Gwyneth Paltrow as likable.
It almost Valentine's Day,
the pre-Goop era. This film is much more faithful to the book, and like a wonderful Whit Stillman film, Love and Friendship, from a few years back, it's the only other film other than that has really faithfully mined that sort of dry wit that's underneath everything that Austen ever wrote. And this is one of her funnier books, so I think it really catches it very well.
Yeah, so maybe nasty isn't the right word. Maybe no, satirical, but not, and comical is.
But
is
not that likable either.
Yeah.
Until a redemption
until she
of
becomes
sorts.
Nice.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
After that, she's very likable.
Ah, she's lovely then.
Eleanor Catton then is the screenplay here of Luminary's fame and Booker Prize winning Eleanor Catton. So has she done a good job on the adaptation? Because you know, books to film, famously very difficult.
Oh, absolutely. She's captured, like Paul says, it isn't much more, it's more faithful to what Jane herself wrote in her books. She really brings it to life. It's lively, it's sparky, and she just captures that sense of everything that Jane Austen writes. I mean, it's very faithful. And there's nice little moments that she's picked out that we don't often hear in adaption. So
I suppose the relationship, one of the nicest relationships in the book in some ways, is that between Anya Taylor-Joy's Emma and Mia Goth's Harriet Smith. Do you like that relationship?
It's a sweet, poor Harriet, an orphan girl in a boarding school, not quite knowing where she fits, but desperate to fall in love. And she has with a poor farmer lad. And Emma just can't handle the idea of Harriet accepting marriage from a farmer and decides that she is going to elevate her. And she becomes her pet project. And she picks a reverend who's handsome, but bumbling, shall we say.
Very vain.
She thinks, right, that might be nice.
Let's listen to a little clip between Emma and Harriet then. And Harriet is very excited because the farmer is Robert Martin, isn't that his name? Yeah, he's coming.
He's a lovely fellow.
Yeah, he's nice.
But he won't do.
Yeah. No. And Emma's none too happy about all of that. So let's have a listen.
Miss Woodhouse, you will never guess what has happened. Robert Martin has offered me his hand. Do you advise me?
Oh, no. The words must be your own. You must be the best judge of your own happiness.
I have now quite determined and really almost made up my mind to refuse Mr. Martin.
Did she get to make up her own mind? I don't think
what's missing in that is the faces, and you can see that the pressure is being brought to bear.
That is Anya Taylor-Joy as Emma putting the pressure on Mia Goth as Harriet Smith. Yeah. Even the Mozart Papageno duet in the background from The Marriage of Figaro, they really are playing this for all its comic worth.
Oh, absolutely. They managed to have a comic moment nearly at almost every turn in this. Mm. There's something that is funny. Bill Nighy plays Mr.
Her
Woodhouse,
father.
The very elite hypochondriac. Yeah. And he is fantastic. fantastic as him.
Apparently, he's a valetudinarian. I interviewed Bill Nighy for this, and
a valetudinarian.
I didn't know. A valetudinarian, which is somebody who worries about other people's health rather than their own. Oh, right. He's obsessed
by
drafts.
He's not actually a hypochondriac.
So an empathetic hypochondriac.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And he, as played by Bill Nighy, he's an empathetic person as well, but he's a bit neurotic.
Right. Yeah. Well, actually, I have a little clip of him with Josh O'Connor, who's Mr. Where is Mr. Elton? Is he the
he's the vicar.
He's a little bit bumbling and all the rest.
He's a twit.
And he knows everything about...
Oh, yeah.
He thinks he knows everything about...
Voice.
Yeah. Well, that's why he's given a sermon in this little clip that we're going to listen to. Bill Nighy's in the congregation and gives us a sense of what he thinks.
Dearly beloved friends, we gather here... in this time of man's great innocence.
Innocence? Innocence? No?
Innocence. That's Bill Nighy's voice coming in there. I mean, you both kind of... How did this look, by the way, in the midst of all of the comedy?
I thought it looked lovely, and she did something slightly different. Autumn de Wilde, fantastic.
Who's directing? Sorry, Autumn de Wilde, yeah.
Yeah, she uses sort of primal colours to lift the characters out of the landscape.
It's very and, spring-like it's, or something. Yeah, it's all it whites is. And yellows and...
It is, and for a long time you're dragged along by and there's this comic tone, but the comic tone isn't allowed to ruin the drama.
All right.
And the mood changes, you know, quite sharply about sort of 20 minutes before the end. So I thought it looked beautiful.
Does it go all autumnal then? Does it suddenly go again?
No, it doesn't. Sorry, Sean. It doesn't actually visually change that much, but there is, you know, a comeuppance has to be had, and so it is.
Mr. Knightley is played. Be still.
Mr. Knightley.
He's terrific.
Johnny Flynn,
One of my favourite characters of all time. I'm a big fan of Mr. Knightley. In this, though, they've narrowed the age gap. Mr. Knightley has always been considerably older than Emma.
He's a bit young for the part.
Well, no, I think in
he's
this
sort
day...
sort of rough. He looks like an outdoorsy type.
He does.
He
looks
sort
like,
of works, you know?
And I just think in this day and age, people might watch and think, why is the owl lad after the young one? So they've kind of narrowed that gap to make it just exactly
because an owl lad back in Jane Austen's time was 32
and had two teeth left
so you know I suppose that it kind of gets rid of that. He was in the BBC adaptation of Les Mis, wasn't he?
He's also going to be he's going to be David Bowie in this film that's coming up. I think he's great in this because when you think of Emma, she's this indoorsy scheming in the library person, and he's always outside, and he watches and says not much while she makes an ass of herself, basically.
Okay, and the other, I suppose, Jane Fairfax, Amber Anderson. Is there anything to like about Jane Fairfax?
Oh, Jane Fairfax, she's just misunderstood. Emma doesn't like her because she's very accomplished, she's beautiful, she can play music, and Emma's not used to having a rival.
No.
Right. So poor Jane is sort of left to...
Okay, but you left the cinema kind of smiling and in the mood for Valentine's Romance, perhaps.
Well, whatever about that, we left the cinema smiling, and I really liked it, I must say. As I say, I thought the comic tone was just lovely, and it's so well cast.
How many hearts out of five, please?
4.5 hearts, Sean, for me. Yeah.
What are you saying, Karen?
4.5 hearts as well.
4.5 hearts. Oh, you're so compatible. 4.5 hearts each. Okay, let us move on to film number 2, which is an entirely different tone and an entirely different style of filmmaking as well. From documentary maker Ciarán Cassidy, one-time producer here in RTE, and documentary maker, in fact, radio documentary maker as well. Jihad Jane tells the story of the most absurd terror cell ever to come together, you could argue, culminated 10 years ago with a series of arrests in Waterford, believe it or not. What is the essential story at the heart of this?
Three different people, Colleen LaRose, Jamie Paul and Ramirez, and a young teenager, Mohammed Khalid, were brought together online. Each one of them they each needed a cause. They needed something.
They were in different parts of the world,
They were all marginalised for different reasons.
Yes, really, all of them, each one of them had a tough life. They were looking for something to belong to and find themselves joining Islamic groups online and bit by bit become radicalised. And they're brought together to assassinate a Swedish cartoonist who had greatly offended
Lars Vilks.
Yeah, Lars Vilks.
Who still has 24-hour police.
Yes, who had drawn a cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad, and that was considered offensive.
And he had been the target of attacks before, but he was also completely unapologetic.
Yeah.
So these three very different people were brought together bit by bit. And what a story that really is stranger than fiction.
So Jihad, the Jihad Jinn part of this is Colleen LaRose.
Yeah.
She renamed herself Jihad Jinn, did she?
She did. She now, Fatima, I think she is now, isn't she? She's taken on a different name now.
So who is Colleen LaRose?
Colleen LaRose. There's great sadness in this, actually, because the plot itself was you know, it was a fantasy. And the guy,
is the assassination plot.
The reason they came to Waterford.
Although I suppose we were on the receiving end of an assassination plot.
No, it's not to say that it was a nice idea, but they came to Waterford. This guy, Black Flag, he called himself online, was this Algerian guy who was a bit of a fantasy himself. Mm. I think he did want to do harm, but he didn't have the wherewithal or connections to do it. Colleen LaRose, she had a terrible childhood, all sorts of, you know, abuse. She was a prostitute by the time she was in her early teens. So she was she was, you know, flotsam. She was an outsider in America, and she was looking for a cause, and these are exactly the kind of people that get scooped up. So I actually felt a great deal of sympathy for her and the other woman as well, because
The other woman would be Jamie Paul Ramirez, who's Jihad Jamie.
She had a tough time.
She had a small son, an absent father, very poor by looking at where the child now lives with her parents. In what seems
and talent to, for finding nasty men as well,
and just and she even says herself that she was bullied from no age, and she was just somebody looking for anything, somebody to pay attention to her.
Let's listen to a clip, and this is Colleen LaRose, Jihad Jinn, and her lawyer Mark Wilson. Now she did serve time, and
7 years,
7 years in prison. Yeah. So let's listen to her. She's talking about that period and the nature of the sentence.
How much trouble I was going to get into? No, I did not know. It was just like even the planning of killing that man, I didn't think that was illegal because I didn't do it. I didn't follow through. But apparently that's called conspiracy. And that's just as bad as actually carrying it through almost.
For, you know what, the impression I get? For her, the minute that she came back to the United States, that episode was over in her life. And she would talk to the agents about it and they would let her go home and that was it. She would go back and live with Kurt. I think she really, that's the way she perceived it.
And then when my lawyer told me that, you know, I was looking at life, I was like, what the heck? I didn't even do anything. The FBI told me, this is a little bit of trouble. This is a lot of trouble. You're right here.
And that's Colleen LaRose and Mark Wilson there from the film Jihad Jinn. Colleen LaRose, often referred to as Jihad Jinn. So Kieran Casty here, he speaks directly to Colleen LaRose. He speaks to Jamie Pauline Ramirez. He speaks to Ali Sharaf Dimash. Who else does he speak to?
He talks to Jamie's parents and her son.
And Colleen's sister,
and
isn't
her,
it?
Right? Yeah.
Mm. She's quite a character, actually.
Yeah, she is quite a character. Yeah. She talks about this terrible life they had as if she was talking about a sandwich she just made. I mean, they're really, it's appalling the lives that they've led. I think it's quite sad to see the Jamie brought her young son to Waterford when she came, and he was only a young boy then. Mm. And he's now a sort of a middle-aged teenager. Mm. And it's just quite sad to see him being asked about those times and what does he remember. And
he has
no relationship with his mother. There's a time where we see her on the phone to him. And it's just, he's another lost child, really.
And Lars Vilks, he also talks to the cartoonist Lars Vilks.
Yes, he does. And I mean, he's quite philosophical, I suppose he's used to it at this stage. But he mentions that, you know, like me and the king, he says 24-hour protection. That never ends, you know.
Is this a didactic film, or does it merely lay out the stories in front of us and let us make our own minds up?
It lays out the story, and it's not didactic. And the good things it does is that it gets to the two of them, and at first
the two women.
Yeah, and at first it's Colleen's voice. She's the more sort of eloquent of the two, I suppose you could say, to stretch that with the meaning of that word. And at first she's in prison, and we're hearing her voice, and then she gets out, and we see her. But interestingly, she's still wearing a veil, and the other one is wearing a hijab. So they have remained Muslims, and perhaps it's a way of expressing their otherness in middle America. So it does that well, but the story itself is a little bit thin for the length of the documentary, right, I found.
And did it work for you, Cara?
It did. I think it really showed.
You were more moved by it, perhaps,
I was. I find it very hard to watch these people who are completely lost by society and end up in the situation. The teenager in America, Muhammad, was he 14 or 15? He has Asperger's.
Yeah.
And he was sort of sucked into this.
He seems to have recovered, though.
I find it quite hard to watch now. I have to say, Lars Vilks, he made a mistake the first time, but after the death threats, he then went on to continue to make a documentary that was highly offensive. Mm. And I just thought, how have you not learned?
But at the same time, freedom of speech, maybe he
thinks that you should be able to draw cartoons.
But
it's
resulted in attacks and injuries. Mm. And I just think it kind of shows him in quite a bad light. Freedom of speech is one thing, but not when you're getting other people shot because of you.
Yeah.
At the same time, you have to say it as you see it. Stars?
I went with 4. Now it's just maybe sort of just under, like at 3.9.
3.9 stars.
What are you going to, Paul?
3 for me. I think it's interesting, but as I say, it's maybe just a little thin.
All right, so that's Jihad Jinn on limited release in cinemas like the AFI, the Lighthouse, the Paulus in Galway. And then Emma, not surprisingly, is on general release. Valentine's night movie for you, would have thought.